Good evening and welcome to Your Call. Tonight's guest is a man who helped lay the foundation of India's telecom revolution as an advisor to then Prime Minister Rajiv Gandhi. He's now back as advisor to another Prime Minister. Sam Pitroda joins me tonight. Thank you very much for coming in, sir. It's interesting, 20 years down the line, we've seen how the telecom revolution has changed the lives of so many Indians. In fact, now we have more mobile phones in India than people have access to toilets. And irony there, how did that actually happen? And on the one hand, phones more basic than such a basic living need?
When I came here in early 80s, phone was a luxury. We had 2 million phones for 750 million people. Based on my background and whatever little I knew about telecom, I was convinced that telecom will change the face of this country. Mm-hmm. And in Rajiv Gandhi, I found political will. I had the know-how, he had the political will. And we clicked. So that gave me the platform to do the things we could all collectively do. So I get a lot of credit for it. But large number of people worked on it for years and years. So the idea then was to really create Indian model of development. Rural telecom, indigenous development, young talent, capacity building, ancillary industries. Mm-hmm. And people didn't understand a lot of these things. They thought we were crazy, saying, what is this computer, software, you know. Today, 20 years down the road, we have not only 800 million mobile phones, but we also generate $75 billion worth of software export.
But do you think this whole issue of corruption has become so insidious in the system that every policy decision is now questioned? The fact is clearly that there was corruption in the allocation of licenses. We've seen now the whole Colgate issue. Again, policy decisions questioned because of loss to national exchequer. How much of this is genuine corruption? How much of this is looking at decisions which, well, there seem to be no accountability to the taxpayer?
I think the key is to really bring about more transparency and accountability in the system. You know, we have this right to information. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, a lot of our information is locked up in Nadawali file. So when do we digitize that file and make it accessible to large number of people in real time? Mm-hmm. Today, when I ask for something with RTI, it may take me 30 days to get that information. A lot of this should be online. Information brings about openness, accessibility, connectivity, transparency. So how do we organize information? Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I'm trying to work on today with the help of lots of other people. I see a great need in this country to build public information infrastructure and democratize information. Information is not democratized. Communication has been democratized. But information is still controlled by very few people. Mm-hmm. It can be manipulated. It can be restructured. And that's why there is this confusion.
We've just seen GDP figures out which are dismal. Again, the whole cynicism, the negativity, as the Prime Minister has talked about, people saying the India story is over. What would you say in your perspective, really, as somebody who's been in government, out and then back again?
I would say we have some glitches. I would say India will continue to grow at 8 to 10% for next 20, 25 years to come because we have 550 million young below age of 25. We are not really restructuring our institutions. Our institutions are obsolete. Old. They are not really in tune with the needs of the 21st century. At times I have said that we have 19th century mindset, 20th century processes, and 21st century needs.
Is given exactly that, do you feel that India in a sense is being let down by its government, by its governance, and even its politicians, I mean across the board? So really three different aspects, both the people elected to power, the politicians, the opposition, and really the whole expectation.
There are many ways to look at it. That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is probably to say that why didn't Indians vote somebody with majority? This is what you get when you vote coalition government. In Rajiv Gandhi's time, the advantage was we were in majority. Mm-hmm. So we could take a different posture. So at the federal level, central level, you need substantial majority to push national agenda. Another aspect of this is that our states are becoming stronger, which is good. We want decentralization. We want a lot of things to happen at state level. So maybe federal is a little weak right now, but states are getting stronger. So if we can put in a strong center with, again, clear agenda, a broad roadmap for the decade, I think we can accomplish a lot. That's the challenge for all of us.
Mr. Pitroda, we've been talking about policy paralysis, and there's been one very outspoken person on that, and that's, of course, Kiran Mazumdar Shaw, who joins me now live from Bangalore. Kiran Shaw, thanks so much for joining me tonight. And would you say Sam Pitroda is a brave man to be in government at this time?
Well, I think he is a very important man to be in the government because he has a big transformational role to play. That's what we need to get ourselves out of this policy paralysis. And, you know, Sam is someone I know and admire very much. And, you know, we work very closely in the National Innovation Council. So if there's one question I would like to ask Sam is that, you know, Sam, you've brought about transformational change in the telecom sector. You've taken on grand challenges in the computer and supercomputer area. So at this point in time, when India is really sort of challenged in its own ineptitude, what would you say are the three big grand challenges that we should be addressing to bring about transformational change?
Kiran, I am very clear. I would say in India, the main focus has to be on process re-engineering. All our processes are based on British Raj, and we are computerizing it. I would like, on a very large scale, process re-engineering, administrative reform. I mean, if you want to travel to some country, you have to get permission from Prime Minister of India. If you want to hire somebody, it takes 6 months to hire somebody in the government. I mean, all these processes are obsolete. You get a budget, but you can't spend because some little guy somewhere in the department in finance dictates what you can do. I mean, let's wake up. Okay, these processes don't make sense. That's one.
Yes.
Two, I would also focus on, similarly, judiciary reforms. So you have administrative reforms, judiciary reforms, and political reforms. These are the three big items. Underneath that, there are lots of issues.
But just one other point you've often made is that somehow we seem to feel that India needs to be run by its politicians. And you, one thing you've advocated is perhaps a non-politician, even in Rashtrapati Bhavan, and Sam Pitroda may not be a bad name for president. You tweeted that.
I have rooted for him. I think Sam will make a great president because we need leadership. We need strong leadership and someone who is who's a man of the world. And that's what Sam is.
Right. Kiran Mazumdar Shaw, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And Mr. Pitroda, she's not the only one rooting for you as president. The NDTV.com poll also has you amongst the front runners.
I'm not aware of it.
What?
I think I'm not aware of it, but I've been told that there are several polls and people have been very generous. That's all I can tell you.
Do you think that it's because there is a sense of frustration at perhaps the idea that only politicians can lead the country? We saw, of course, the Prime Minister made a very successful finance minister in 1991 when he was brought out of chairman of UGC. And as finance minister, he led India into liberalization.
I don't know. I'm not very close to all of that. You know, I'm sort of putting my nose on the ground and doing my work. I'm not much into reading papers and watching TVs and all that. You know, I hardly get time. I get
Fandi, you never read newspapers.
I don't read newspapers at all. I get 500 emails a day on an average day. I can't keep up. You know, I'm not humanly capable of handling all of it. So if there's important news, it'll come to you anyway. You know, and if it is some other news which is of no importance to you, why worry about it? You know, but I think our systems are such, especially the way we elect our people and president and all, there's very little room for outside intervention. I mean, even look at our government service. You know, we need domain experts to be able to come into the government to run many of these ministries. But there is very little outside intervention in administration.
How has that experience been like for you? Because we've seen Nandan Nilekani also faced many of the same problems you may well have faced 20 years ago. In fact, he said he consulted you before he actually decided whether to take on the job or not. And he faced many, many roadblocks. How does that actually work when you get in people of the best minds from who are not in government yet, bring them in? Is that experience a happy one?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I have had very happy experience. I think people have been very nice, very supportive. But once in a while, you do get some resistance. But that happens everywhere. So don't focus on it. Just look at good stuff in everybody. You know, there are always some issues here and there, but you can't get hung up on it. Then don't do it.
And it's an interesting, again, I say 20 years, one prime minister to another. What are the differences you've seen between the two prime ministers? I know what the numbers are, but otherwise.
Well, a lot of people don't realize that I worked for Rajiv Gandhi. Mm-hmm. After that, when Rajiv Gandhi lost election, I was advised to resign. Mm-hmm. And I decided not to resign. I said, look, I must recognize that I'm doing it for India and Indians and not for one party or the other. Rajiv Gandhi had just lost election. He and I had a conversation. And he also agreed that I must continue. All my friends said, you must resign because we are too closely associated with Rajiv. I said, no. Mm-hmm. If VP Singh decides to fire me, that's his privilege. He is the Prime Minister. I'm going to continue. Mm-hmm. So I continued with VP Singh. I was chairman of Telecom Commission while he was the Prime Minister. I continued with Chandrasekhar. I continued with Narasimha Rao. People don't remember these things. Okay. I continued with Devi Gowda. And finally, I had to leave because I wasn't spending enough time. And then when there was a right window of opportunity, I thought this was a good time to come back and do what needs to be done. And I would say people have been very generous to me. Mm-hmm. They've been very nice to me. And I'm thankful to all of them.
Well, I have another question now from someone also who has worked in those heady Rajiv days. Manishankar Iyer has this question to ask you.
Great. Wow. What a surprise.
You worked very, very closely with Rajiv Gandhi, and now you've been working very closely for several years with Dr. Manmohan Singh. What is the difference you see in what you are asked to solve, the methods by which you solve it, and the extent to which there is support given to your endeavors in these two different regimes?
Thanks, Bunny. Really appreciate, and it's good to see you. I think Rajiv Gandhi's time, there was different energy, different enthusiasm, different ecosystem. Partly we were all young. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in 40s and not in 70s. So I think that was a different era. It was a time of great deal of enthusiasm. Today, the mood is very different. But I must say that Prime Minister has been very kind, Manmohan Singh. He has always given me free hand, all the support I need. I cannot think of anything where he has not been supportive. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have not been affected by any policy decision here or there. Okay. If I ask for something, he has supported it. But overall ecosystem is very different. Mm-hmm. That's the difference I see.
You just made that point, and one big challenge, of course, we know is something you were very closely associated with was, of course, the whole plan to modernize the railways. We've just had another railway derailment, more people dying, and the whole question of the modernization plan, which you had actually overseen, has been derailed by the passenger fare issue. Did that disappoint you?
Yes, it did. But I understand that this is the way of life in India. Okay. We did spend a lot of time. I personally spent 4 months focusing on railways, learning a lot. And along with me, I had some very distinguished people like Deepak Parekh and Maya Verma and Rajiv Lal and Chatterjee and others. And hundreds of other people from railway and railway board helped us in putting together this plan. Our idea was to spend $200 billion roughly to really completely modernize railways. And we realize that without modernization, there is no safety. I mean, today's accident is a good example.
And unfortunately, we might see more of this. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. You don't like it. But we got to invest in modernizing our basic infrastructure. Railway is the transportation for the poor. Railways, according to me, will change the face of this country if we do it right again. But you can't just tinker with it. You got to think of generational change.
I have with me somebody from the Trinamool, Minister Shogato Roy. And Mr. Roy, we've just been discussing the whole issue of railway modernization. We've seen yet another accident, the whole issue really of linking safety and modernization. Yet the Trinamool, and many felt that what happened with the railway budget is something the Trinamool should not have done. The being obdurate, getting the Dinesh Trivedi to resign over railway fares, actually put Indian Railways back more than 20 years.
No, I would not agree with you that any harm has happened to the railways. The party has always been against raising of passenger fares, especially in the lowest class. So that view of the party still prevails. But I'd like to know from Mr. Pitroda that earlier also he was given a project for introducing fiber optics along the railway lines through the RailTel Corporation. And recently also he has submitted a report on modernization and resource mobilization for the railways. How does he feel that the railways have fared in implementing his ideas?
See, our job was basically to submit recommendations. Ultimately, railway board and railway department has to implement. I think on fiber optics, there has been a lot of progress. I just came out of a meeting this morning where fiber optics, RailTel, is implementing connectivity to 250,000 panchayats. They are one of the three key players with BSNL, RailTel, and Power Grid. So that work is going on. I think fiber optics project is going pretty well. The modernization of railway was just submitted, you know, a couple of months ago. And it's up to the railway board to execute. That's not our job.
Mr. Shogato Roy, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Is the problem that these reports often seem to go into the whole red tape cycle of the Indian government? They may well be in some dustbin now. Who's looking and implementing them?
Well, fortunately, because of the web, dustbins don't matter. Because these reports are out in cyberspace, read by millions and millions in the world. When it's a paper, piece of paper, it goes in dustbin, nobody knows. Now it's in cyberspace. People in Russia, China, India, you know, Japan, everyone is reading that report. It's accessible to everybody. So you can't say it's in dustbin. That report will come alive someday.
How is it possible for you to stay detached, in a sense, by what happens with your report? Because is there, at any sense, a level of frustration? A report you spent many man hours, the best minds working on it, yet the recommendations are not implemented or not politically comfortable?
You can't worry about frustrations. If you think of frustrations in India, best thing to do is not get up in the morning. You get up every morning with same enthusiasm and you just go do things that need to be done. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. So you work on 50 things, 10 work now, 40 don't work. Pick up another 10, they work next week. Keep pushing the overall agenda. Don't get disappointed.
I think one other avatar of yours was, of course, as head of the National Knowledge Commission. And I'm asking you now at a time when so many students have questions about what's happening with the IITs. Kapil Sibal very keen on a one nation, one examination and major changes. Resistance to change, we've seen opponents say that why are politicians meddling with A-grade institutions? And I've got on the line now, well, a young man and a well-known author, former IITian, Chetan Bhagat. Chetan, now if I could ask you, also Mr. Sam Pitroda was head of the National Knowledge Commission. And in focus now again with Class 12 results have been one, high cutoffs. We've discussed this before, the near 100% cutoffs. And also now the confusion over IIT and the government's argument that this will restore the sanctity of the Class 12 board system. Your views, perhaps, and anything you'd like to ask Mr. Pitroda on that?
Yeah, thanks, Sonia, for giving me this chance. Mr. Pitroda, I'll tell you, I mean, I know it's not something which may come out, but what will happen is, you have all these state boards like Assam board and Maharashtra boards who will have a big weightage in the IIT entrance, and given how parochial and regional India gets, there will be pressure. People will say, oh, kids from Assam must get into IIT, so everybody do lenient marking because we want to send maximum kids from Assam to IIT. And all these kind of weird things will start happening. You'll normalize us to scores, but the Assam kids would have done really well. And, you know, it's not advisable. You have 30% weightage for practical marks, which are mainly given on nepotism in class 12. You're using that to enter into an IIT. It's destroying something. And I think the broader picture is, you know, it's a place of excellence. And a politician is not there to, you know, he's trying to please everybody. So even if you announce a lottery for getting into IITs, a lot of people will support it because they can't get in anyway. But that doesn't mean you should do that, you know. Excellence is a little bit exclusive, and politician has to be inclusive. So I think a politician should not run places of excellence. I mean, there's an inherent problem in that. It's not just this modification, it's not just the IIT. I don't know, I love your views on that.
I agree that place of excellence has to be place of excellence. And, you know, there is price to pay. And the price to pay may require, you know, backing off from a little bit of equity.
Mm-hmm. But do you think that we are actually going, at least in institutional excellence, educational excellence, we are actually going the other way around, that merit is increasing, taking a back seat?
Yeah, but I have a very different view of education. Okay. And I've been talking about it now on many global forums, especially in US and Europe. I've been saying that the education as we understand today is essentially obsolete. Mm-hmm. Who decided it should take 4 years to get a degree? Who decided that you need a certificate when you finish 4 years? The very basic model of education has changed. Learning models have changed. I don't learn the same way today, mm-hmm. the way I learned when I was a kid. What's the role of the teacher? Should teacher really be delivering content and creating content? I don't need teacher to deliver content. I don't need teacher to create content. What do I need teacher for? Maybe I need a mentor. So I think our entire education system world over is up for grab. I believe it's going to dismantle over a period of time. Mm-hmm. And it will start from advanced countries because it costs $40,000 tuition to go into a great university. It's not scalable. It's not sustainable. So I think, just wait. Just wait.
That's a fascinating perspective there. Chetan Bhagat, thanks so much for joining us tonight with those questions. Thank you. It was great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
And the challenges, of course, of dealing with many different mindsets, many different Indias at one time. One issue which created controversy when you're head of National Knowledge Commission were your views on reservations. And many at that time had protested, politicians had protested, and yet many asked questions were during a recent campaign. Rahul Gandhi introduced you by your caste, Vishwakarma, in Uttar Pradesh. Do your views on reservations still stand? In India, is your caste still a calling card?
That's not the point. The point is very different. Mm-hmm. I think media has the great ability to twist things a little bit. Fact that I'm son of a carpenter, you can't take that away from me. I'm proud of it. There's nothing wrong with it. But when I went to college, got my degree in telecom and IT and computers, I redefined myself. Nobody remembers that I'm son of a carpenter. I'm a telecom engineer world over, not just in India. You go to Brazil, you go to Canada, you go to US, you go to any major country, mm-hmm. and you say Sam Petroda, everybody knows he's a telecom guy. So it's okay to be son of a carpenter.
But then why should it define you? Nobody asks what your caste is. Why should it define you in a UP election campaign?
But that's okay. I think his message was very different. I think Rahul Gandhi really meant that if Sam Petroda, a son of a carpenter, can accomplish all this, you can do it too. I tell people that my story is story of India. Mm-hmm. Somebody other day asked me, he said, what did India give you? I said, everything. If I could go to college for $100 and get a master's degree in physics, show me a country where you can do that. Okay. So I think the message there was that don't worry about how poor you are. don't worry about your caste, your parents. You can do things in this country. That was the message. It got twisted.
Sam Patroda, as we end tonight, really I think your story in some ways sums up the huge potential, the growth, the many, many millions of India stories which are actually still alive out there. Tell us a bit about that, because I think people who see you today don't realize that it actually began in a small village.
I was born and raised in a small little tribal village in Orissa. No electricity, no water, no doctor, no pharmacy, no schools, nothing. My mother had 8 kids, all delivered at home, zero cost of delivery. My father had 4th grade education. He had migrated from Gujarat to Orissa looking for opportunities. Can you imagine that? In 30s. And I was lucky to be able to go to school in Gujarat because we were very Gandhian. Mm-hmm. Being Gujarati in Orissa, the only connection with Gujarat was Gandhi and Sardar Patel. So when Sardar Patel died, my parents decided to send us to boarding school in Vallabhvidyanagar. So I went to school there, then went to college in Baroda. I was the first in the family to graduate out of college. Had a BS in physics, then got a master's in physics, and then decided to go to America to get a PhD in physics. I liked physics. Went to US and found out it takes 7 years to get a PhD. I had a girlfriend in Baroda. So I changed my field to electrical engineering. Got my degree in 9 months, called my girlfriend, got married there. Had never been to Delhi, came to Delhi. Tried to make a phone call to my wife. Couldn't make a phone call. So a little bit of ignorance. I would say a little bit of arrogance and a lot of ignorance, said, I'm going to fix this thing. If I had known everything I know today, I would have never tried it. So I believe ignorance is a great asset. Mm-hmm. So then I said, I'm going to devote my next 10 years to work on India's telecom. Plus, I was convinced that India would benefit a great deal from telecom, IT, software. And then I found Rajiv Connection. Mm-hmm. And that sort of changed the whole thing. That changed my life.
Well, I think many in India are happy that you couldn't make that phone call to your wife. Sam Patroda, thank you so much for being
with
us. Thank you.
Thank you.